We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
I'm Josh Hammer, and welcome back to America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines, for that matter, affecting our great country and our American way of life. On today's show, our deep dive later on is going to take us back to Georgia. Some updates there. We haven't forgotten about Fani Willis and that whole saga down there in Fulton County, Georgia. Then later in the show, in today's closing argument, my syndicated column out today encourages you to go touch some grass. Well, what the heck do I possibly mean by that? We're going to get into all that later on in the show. But first, it's time, as always, to go around the horn. We begin in New York City on Monday. Monday is April 1st. Wow, by the way, where did it go? I feel like it was just yesterday where I was celebrating New Year's Eve with my wife and some of our friends. Monday is April 1st. My goodness. And Monday, April 1st, is a deadline for the District Attorney's Office of New York. This is for Alvin Bragg's office in particular. That is their deadline to respond to Donald Trump's motion to push back this trial further. The reason for the trial that they are continuing to try to push back further, that is Trump's lawyers, they are pushing it back further or trying to do so for pre-trial publicity. That is their stated reason for doing so. I do not think that this is going to work. It was just earlier this week or so that Judge Juan Merchan solidified his decision to continue this proceeding, looking at an April 15th starting date for a jury selection for voir dire. I do not anticipate that that is going to actually work, but I guess we'll see. But in any event, just flag for now that Monday is the deadline for Alvin Bragg's office to respond in a formal court filing to Donald Trump's lawyers' push to push this thing back even further. Now, moving on, staying in New York City, I guess, for now, Joe Biden actually last night had this fairly epic $25 million fundraising dinner, which you've probably heard about. It involved Joe Biden and Barack Obama, and Lizzo was there. All this is going on, by the way, while Donald Trump was also there in the New York area. He was attending the wake of the tragically and horrifically murdered NYPD cop Joe Diller. And it was just a brilliant political optical move for Trump to stand with law enforcement, to stand with the police simultaneously, while Joe Biden is just yucking it up with the liberal elites, the very elites that have fallen so out of favor, rightfully so, with the American people. But interesting scoop coming in from the FT, the Financial Times. Apparently, Donald Trump is planning for a $33 million fundraiser at Mar-a-Lago, his palatial estate in Palm Beach, Florida, which would have the effect of outraising this Joe Biden fundraiser. I don't know exactly where they're going to get that $33 million from, but fantastic news, certainly for the campaign coffers of Donald Trump, if they are able to do so and pull this off. We like to keep track of campaign finance and fundraising a little bit here on America on Trial because it has very tangible implications for Trump's ability to pay his lawyers and to post things like this now reduced $175 million bond payment in the Tish James fraud case up in New York City. Moving over to Pennsylvania, interesting story that I just realized happened yesterday in Pennsylvania. There was an important ruling from the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit. They ruled on Wednesday, but it didn't cross my feed until yesterday. A 2-1 decision that basically says that for mail-in ballots that arrive on time, but they are in envelopes without dates, and they were handwritten, or perhaps they even have incorrect dates. So basically, if they arrive on time, but you don't have a verified date set right there, then they do not have to be counted. That is a big ruling, and it's an important ruling as well because it overturns the lower court, the federal district court judge's opinion in this very matter. And it's an interesting ruling further because the majority opinion is actually written by a center-left judge, a Democratic nominee by the name of Judge Thomas Ambrose, he's the Third Circuit judge who wrote the opinion in this case. This is not exactly a quote-unquote far-right judge, a nefarious so-called Trump judge that the mainstream media is constantly warning you about. No, this was a nonpartisan decision. The opinion from Judge Ambrose is a very good one. It's a very straightforward decision right there. And look, let's see what happens. I wonder if this is a harbinger of things to come when it comes to election-related litigation, when it comes to mail-in balloting, early voting-related litigation over the course of this year. We haven't seen a ton of it necessarily so far, but I have to imagine that as we start to kick things into full gear, we're going to start to see a lot more of this type of litigation. For now, just note that the Third Circuit, which is based right there in Pennsylvania, the Third Circuit has issued an excellent ruling when it comes to mail-in ballots that we don't know the exact date origin of them in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. We'll see if we get a different circuit to say something else, setting up a potential circuit split that would be really probably too enticing for the Supreme Court to pass up on. But for now, just note that it was a very good ruling this week in Pennsylvania in the Third Circuit. Pennsylvania, of course, being one of the only real 6-7 battleground swing states that these days dictate the results of our elections. Moving on to New York City again, Sam Bankman-Fried sentenced to 25 years in prison for a gargantuan financial fraud scheme, wire fraud, securities fraud, pilfering up to $10 billion in crypto clients' funding for his own nefarious schemes to build his political clout and to buy real estate in the Bahamas. You likely are familiar with the story from now. So Sam Bankman-Fried sentenced to 25 years in prison. Probably not enough, if we're being honest. It pales in comparison to what Bernie Madoff got. Bernie Madoff was sentenced to closer to 150 years or so, if memory serves there, and Sam Bankman-Fried is most easily analogized to Bernie Madoff, but hard to be too terribly upset here. 25 years, that's no cakewalk. That's a serious sentence. You do kind of have to ask yourself whether his notable political connections maybe had a role to play in the fact that the sentencing is a lot lower than the Madoff sentencing. So Sam Bankman-Fried grew up in something of a Democratic Party royalty family. He has parents who are Stanford Law School professors. He grew up in San Francisco Bay royalty, things like that. So you do have to ask that question, but simultaneously, I don't want to come across as an over-pessimist here. This is a serious sentence, so give credit, I guess, to an extent where credit is due. So Sam Bankman-Fried going to the slammer as of now for 25 years. He will obviously have his shot on appeal. A couple of just redistricting decisions to note for you as well. First, in South Carolina, interesting development here. The Supreme Court heard a case in October called Alexander versus South Carolina Conference of the NAACP. This is an appeal, as the name would imply, by a local NAACP chapter in South Carolina seeking to invalidate the legislative map that the lawmakers there had put in place, the Republican lawmakers who dominate the legislative chamber there in South Carolina. And big news for now, this court has essentially said that they are going to keep the map for purposes of the upcoming congressional primaries on June 11th. And the reason for that is that they are still awaiting news from the United States Supreme Court on the matter. So that's definitely good news for Republicans in the short term in South Carolina, that these maps are going to stay on for at least as long as possible until the U.S. Supreme Court weighs in definitively. And similarly, there was other redistricting-related news out of my state, the great state of Florida, earlier this week, where a panel of federal judges upheld Florida's congressional map. They upheld the much-discussed and much-ballyhooed congressional map that Florida's Republican-dominated legislature and Governor DeSantis managed to usher through and get signed into law prior to the 2022 midterm elections. That map, along with Lee Zeldin's coattails down ballot in New York State, those were really the two reasons why Republicans took control of the House in the first place in 2022. It was the fact that Florida managed to pass a 20-8 R2D dominated congressional slate, as well as the fact that Lee Zeldin, even though he lost, ran so far ahead and had such a close race against Kathy Hochul that he managed to pull many lower down ballot congressional candidates over the finish line simply due to that. And those are going to be your Around the Horn updates for today. Up next, today's deep dive takes us back to Fani Willis and the state of Georgia. that case certainly has not gone anywhere. We've got a ways to go. Stay with us. We're going to get into it yet again.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
What is the no-spin news all about?
You know that this is a fact-based analysis news program. You know that. We avoid speculation. We don't do conspiracies here. We don't do party politics here. We're not nonpartisan. That's wrong. Not that. Okay, we are advocates for a stronger America and a more just society. We don't believe in communism. We don't believe in socialism. We don't believe in nihilism. We don't believe in the progressive woke culture. We think it is un-American. We don't support that. So you should know what we are. And it would then crystallize what we do.
Listen to the No Spin News. Subscribe to Bill O'Reilly's podcast feed wherever podcasts are available.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. Let's return to the state of Georgia. This prosecution has not gone anywhere whatsoever. There was a hearing yesterday in the courtroom of Judge Scott McAfee. We're basically still trying to work out which charges can actually be brought against which defendants in this case. If you recall, prior to Judge Scott McAfee's attempt to Solomonically split the baby, so to speak, when it came to his bespoke and possibly ultimately overturned remedy to have Nathan Wade go away from this case in exchange for Fani Willis staying on it. Prior to that, the judge himself had actually dismissed a number of these charges. He basically said that there was insufficient grounds for some of these charges against Donald Trump and his co-defendants, and that was that. And there was some similar news yesterday. Fani Willis was dealt a blow in her courtroom when it came to this sprawling RICO case yesterday. Scott McAfee agreed to hear further pretrial motions and an additional appeal against her ability to bring charges against more of the defendants. For now, it's just worth kind of contextualizing the fact that this thing is continuing to plod along at something of a snail's pace right now. And then kind of mark your calendars as well. This Monday, April 1st, is also going to be the deadline for Donald Trump and his co-defendants there in Fulton County, Georgia, to seek permission to appeal formally before the Georgia Court of Appeals on Judge McAfee's order to disqualify Nathan Wade and that whole remedy. So Monday is the deadline to actually issue that appeal and get it going before the Georgia Court of Appeals. Scott McAfee, the trial court judge, has already issued that certificate of immediate review. They just have to file the actual appeal by Monday. So the combined effect, if you zoom out a little bit here, the combined effect of the fact that Trump and his co-defendants are now kicking up to the higher level to the appellate court simply to review the remedy to disqualify Nathan in exchange for Fani staying on. You combine that with the fact that what happened yesterday, and there's this continuing ongoing saga as to some of these charges that just don't have enough evidence, and they're hearing appeals as to whether they can even be brought in the first place. We're not anywhere close. I mean, we are not anywhere close to starting this trial yet. That really is kind of the broader point here that I'm trying to make and to get across to you. This thing is not getting started anytime soon. And even right now, technically speaking, on the legal calendar, the trial is not actually supposed to start until August, until early August of 2024. As of now, it is very difficult, I think, to see this thing even getting across the finish line, or even at the starting gate, I should say, at all prior to November, let alone getting across the finish line. There's just a lot of pretrial stuff that still has to get sorted out here. What charges are going to be brought? Are they going to be in state or federal court for that matter? We're still waiting to hear when it comes to some of Trump's co-defendants who are trying to move this thing out of state court to federal court. There's just so many moving parts here, and there really is a long ways to go. Ultimately, the most important point that I want to make here, and it's an important one, is just to bear in mind, just as a reminder, that you're dealing here with a far-left local prosecutor in Fannie Willis, who is prosecuting the former president of the United States, who, oh, by the way, is going to be the presumptive nominee of a major political party yet again this year, along with 18 other co-defendants on mob boss style RICO racketeering charges. The woman who was there on the witness stand for this evidentiary hearing with Nathan Wade, talking about she didn't know what country Belize and Bahamas were in. It's just clown car late stage Republic stuff. That's really what it is. It is absolute garbage. And sometimes I think it's important to just step away a little bit and to just call a spade a spade. This is banana republic stuff in Georgia that is going on right now. And the case is definitely starting to fall apart a little bit. I ultimately predict that the appellate panel in this case is probably not going to uphold Judge McAfee's Solomonic baby splitting of a remedy, which in tangible terms means I think that there's probably a decent chance that Fannie Willis is ultimately not going to be able to prosecute this case in the first place. But for now, we will see. Just bear in mind that there are just continuing troubles in this case. This thing is going on and on and on. It is a classic example, not wholly dissimilar from Alvin Bragg in New York City, to a far-left prosecutorial hack bringing these charges on grossly politicized grounds. I think there's a decent chance that she ultimately, that is Fannie Willis, probably going to be disqualified, is what I'm trying to say, from this case there in Georgia. Up next, today's closing argument, go out and touch some grass. What do I mean by that? Well, stay with us. We'll be right back and explain.
I'm Mike Slater from the podcast Politics by Faith. This is a crazy time in our country. It's stressful, a lot of anxiety, and it's going to get worse. And I realized that one of the things that helps me take away the stress is realizing that there's nothing new under the sun. So on this podcast, we take the news of the day, and we run it through the Bible and other periods in history to realize that we've been through this before and we can rise above again. Politics by Faith, anywhere you listen to the podcast. Politics by Faith.
Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. The absolutely horrific Francis Scott Key Bridge disaster earlier this week in Baltimore has just set up an absolute flurry. There's been an explosion all week of people continuing to talk about what the actual heck happened. And look, to an extent, I really don't blame you. I watched that video so many times when it happened Tuesday morning. Just really difficult to wrap your mind around how something like this can possibly happen. Just a total disaster. I mean, the video frankly looks surreal. As I wrote in my column today, it really did remind me of those old Godzilla movies and just watching these toy cities collapse in the footage that they tried to film from the 1950s and 60s. It just looks so fake, properly so. It looks so fake to today's modern viewers. And that really is what I thought about watching this horrible video on Tuesday. But nonetheless, we know what happened at this point. We have sufficient data to know what happened. The captain of this ship was a local pilot, and they lost power. They lost electrical power in a tragic fluke incident. In fact, the pilot of the ship actually had the foresight to issue a Mayday distress signal, which allowed local law enforcement and highway patrol to go ahead and immediately try to shut down the bridge, which saved many, many innocent lives. I mean, look, every single lost life is obviously a tragedy, horror, absolutely horrific stuff, no doubt about that. But on the other hand, we have to acknowledge that we're talking here about one of the most traversed bridges in the entire northeastern Acela corridor, and it is still somewhat remarkable that only six people as of now are presumed dead. Now, despite all that, you've had a lot of people that have continued to beat the drums of various types of quote-unquote alternative explanations. A less polite way of saying it might be to say conspiracy theories. And you've had some people say that, oh, maybe there was an inside job. Maybe it's to try to manufacture a crisis that Joe Biden can then exploit. Maybe it was a cyber attack from a foreign actor. Maybe this was just incompetence from affirmative action, DEI hire, or something like that. And the point I want to make, and this is the point of my column today, not everything actually has an alternative explanation. Yes, it is totally true. We live in a day and age where many things that are dismissed as so-called conspiracy theories end up being true. The Wuhan lab leak when it comes to COVID-19 comes to mind. Certainly the Hunter Biden laptop, the so-called laptop from hell, to use the provocative phrasing of the New York Post's Miranda Devine. Those both come to mind immediately. But sometimes a so-called conspiracy is just an actual conspiracy theory. That's a really, really important point to make, and I just wanted to underscore it here. Sometimes, guys, sometimes you need to just put down the phone, get off your social media rabbit holes, and go online and touch some grass. I'm trying to lead by example. This week, my wife and I went to the Miami Open, the professional tennis tournament, on Tuesday evening with some friends. It was really great fun. And then just last night, or yesterday afternoon, I should say, yesterday was opening day in Major League Baseball. We actually went to the Miami Marlins game as well here in South Florida, where we live. The Marlins ended up losing in bonus baseball and extra innings in the 12th inning to the Pittsburgh Pirates. But the point is, whatever it is that you feel like you have to do just to put the phone down and go out and breathe some fresh air, go ahead and do it. Go ahead and do it, because it's going to be better for your mental sanity. I really, truly do feel that way. So that's it for today's America on Trial. Hope you enjoyed today's episode, as always. Hope you have a great weekend, folks. Go ahead and put those words into practice this weekend. Go ahead and take a walk. Go hang out with your friends, family. Go have a beer with some of your buddies, with your boys. Do whatever it is you have to do to unwind. But we will be right back here in the saddle Monday morning. Until then, Josh Hammer signing off. I hope you all have a great weekend. We'll be right back.